The most valuable commodity on Earth today is data. How we make it, use it, move it, and protect it. My name's David McCall. Join me today for the QTS Experience. All right, 3, 2, 1. Edwina Payne, thank you for joining me on the QTS Experience.
Oh, thank you very much for having me.
My great pleasure. We're here today at the ATP Cares event, great charity event.
It's always a fantastic event. I think that's one of the interesting things about the Georgia CIO community. We get out and really support a lot of the nonprofits, and what's a better way to do that than a day of golf?
A day of golf, and it's turning out to be a gorgeous day out there. Earlier it was all overcast, and since I'm not golfing, I'm not gonna lie, I was a little bit like, ha, and now it's gorgeous.
Just desserts. No, I think it's gonna be a gorgeous day.
Well, today when we had an opportunity offline, we were talking about what could we talk about today? And usually when I get CTOs or CIOs, I love to get into stuff like security and technology. And you said, yeah, that's interesting. And I was like, what do you mean that's interesting? And you blew my mind when you said, you know what I'd really like to talk about is these big ideas. And I just sat there and listened and loved everything you were talking about. And you kind of summed it up with this phrase of, you know, what's the art of the possible? So that's where I want to kick it off with, is the art of the possible. When you think about that and you think about your role now at Varsity Brands, what does that mean to you?
I think as a CIO, you're always trying to think a few steps ahead of your business partners. And at Varsity Brands, we're all about enhancing and encouraging that student experience and trying to elevate that experience for a student. Mm. Varsity Brands has three divisions: BSN Sports, where we sell all sorts of sports uniforms and sports equipment; Varsity Spirit, which is all about cheer and band. Mm. I'm all about band, not so much the cheer, but I love my band. And then Herf Jones, which is over 100 years old, very traditional, celebrating achievement, caps and gowns and class rings and yearbooks. And so as you think about that student experience and how do you elevate that across the entire continuum of a student, starting out in eighth grade, playing soccer, maybe playing basketball in high school, getting into band in college, and then buying their cap and gown, how do you uniquely identify that student throughout that entire lifetime? And how do you continue to work with them and elevate that customer slash consumer slash student experience? So how do you do that? And to me, that's the exciting part of my job, is partnering with my business folks, saying, how can we better serve that student customer?
So when you have a conversation with them, how do you, I mean, those are three very distinct business groups. I mean, they're related.
Sure.
We also talked about, this was a remarkable homegrown story, you know, these organizations. But collectively, it's a significant business. How do you capture their imagination to say, look, this is what we've done, and you're world-class in these areas, very traditional areas. It's a necessary, been part of Americana forever. Now, how do we think about consumer experience, the user experience? How do we think about technology? How do we think about how we grow our business? How do you capture their imagination to help them, help each other do that?
For me, it's about giving real tangible examples from other industries that are applicable. I love that phrase, I'm from Missouri, so show me. And it really is about showing them and talking them through. We were having a conversation last week about customer intimacy. And usually you think in order to have customer intimacy, it involves a lot of people. But I talked through them an example of an order delivery. Wouldn't you love to get on your cell phone a text message saying, hey, your order is going to be delivered next week. Is that okay with you? And you could go, no, not so much. I really want it 3 days earlier. And that little text would come back, and which is really a chatbot, of course, on the other side saying, let me check into that for you. Yeah, I can get it there 3 days earlier. What an amazing customer experience. It involved no human touch points whatsoever, except for the customer engaging with technology. And so when you can use examples like that, which is really possible, there, that's not rocket science. It's really a chatbot picking up on some keywords, but it creates a customer experience and a student experience and a parent experience that's pretty exciting. And folks really get excited when they think about that art of the possible.
I also have found that a couple things. One, we want to have that experience on something like this.
Yep, right? Everybody's got a phone.
I don't want it. I can't even tell you how many times in the last month, well, I sent you an email about that. I get so many emails that it is easy for me to get them to miss something, pretty easy. So I prefer a notification to my phone, email or text or whatever, but here's our notification. But secondly, as often as not, we want to delay a delivery as opposed to accelerate a delivery. Hey, can you do it at this time of day? Hey, can you push it out 5 days or 7 days because our life is moving like this? We've had an unexpected interruption or something's changed. Can you make a change and just make it easy? I don't want to have to chase something down. Sure, here's the change. Here's the receipt of the change. Let us know if something needs to change again.
Just make it frictionless, and that's what we're all looking for. I wonder how many more years it's going to be before we're annoyed with text messages. Yeah. We used to be excited about an email message versus having to call a call center and say, what's the status of my order? We thought email was the greatest thing since sliced bread. How long is it going to be before the text messages become overwhelming and it's going to now need to be something else, another way to interact with the consumer?
Probably about three. And the reason I know that is my first real everyday use of technology was a pager.
Okay, yeah, we all had one.
And I got the pager with numbers, and my children, it's impossible. I've been married 34, almost 35 years, but we were married 12 years before we had kids. So they grew up with the interwebs their whole life. They have no idea. And they still sit there, not just through the whatever hundreds of channels we have on satellite, but also the 12 streaming services, as I've just audited, that we're paying for, that we need to make some changes on.
And you're horrified at the monthly bill.
We've got Mini Yoda on that one, and we've got the so-and-so on that one.
And there's still nothing to watch.
And there's still nothing to watch. It's still, actually what they're watching is 10-second minuets on their talk ticking, whatever thing they're doing. Drives me crazy. But anyway, I digress. Little Freudian slip there. But then we were super stoked when you got not just the numbers, but you could get letters. You could get like a small sentence, which almost always was call the office.
Call the office.
Yeah. So that when we could get to email, and then email on just your computer. There were no tablets back then, a laptop that would cause the lights to dim when you powered it up.
Weighed a ton.
So, you know, all these things, it's amusing when you mention that, like how soon before
we're tired of that,
what's the next thing?
Yeah.
I don't even know what the next thing might be. Hard to say. I mean, we're already sort of androids right now. We're not androids. What are we? Cyborgs running around with these things.
Partially.
So when you help capture the imagination of your colleagues or even your customers in a post-COVID world, where do you take either products or the user experience? Now that you've mentioned this, so people are looking for, and I have a friend, I don't have permission to say the name of their organization, but they used to be primarily a storefront with some online retail. Now they're almost 100% online retail and never doing more business. I mean, just gangbusters.
Yeah.
He's in the warehouse area, so he's talking about the logistics part of it and how they're automating. They're not so much reducing their workforce as they are enhancing it. They still need people, but just how automated that back end is back to the user experience and how users can, through their app and app choices, adjust the back end automation. It's really pretty fascinating. But it's also cause for their organization sort of rethinking what's our customer want? Where do we think is next? How do we make this frictionless next?
And who's the customer?
And who's the customer? That's exactly right. They used to be primarily a B2B, and now they're not. They're probably 60%
B2C.
Is that changing in your world, or what are you guys thinking about?
I would say definitely, because we ask ourselves constantly, who's our customer? Is it the student who's actually consuming or using the products? Mm. Is it the parent who's actually paying for it in most instances? Is it the athletic director who's making the decision on whose uniforms he's going to buy? Mm-hmm. And so that question of customer, I think, is getting blurrier and blurrier all the time. Mm. In the B2B space, we used to think as a purchasing agent was really our user or our customer. But now those purchasing agents are wanting that same Amazon-like experience than everyone else is. So the demands just keep ratcheting up. Mm. Because as you say, life is very chaotic. And I don't have time to wait around for the FedEx guy to come somewhere between 8 a.m. and 8 p.m. at night and wait to sign for my wine delivery from Napa. I want to schedule that.
Right.
Hey, I'm not going to be here for 4 days. Bring it on Tuesday after 5 p.m.
Right.
when I know I'm going to be here.
Right.
So how do we eliminate those frictions between all of the handoffs in the supply chain? And integration, and again, technology is the key to making that happen. The more seamless we can make those technology touch points, the more standard we can get in our touch points with our supply chain partners, either the warehouse or that last mile of FedEx or DHL or the USPS. The better that end customer experience is going to be. And that really is the challenge from a technology perspective. And how do you, in a company that's grown organically, Herf Jones over 100 years, BSN Sports started in the back trunk of someone's car. How do you knit those systems together? How do you elevate those experiences with those systems? How do you modernize them at the same time you're trying to drive sales and run a business? And so it is very challenging trying to meet all of those stakeholders and come up with a solution and a roadmap that's going to meet the timeline, it's going to meet the cost, and it also has to meet the quality expectations of a whole group of people.
So we all want to know, how are you doing that?
For me, it starts with two spots, honestly. Firstly, where are we at today? So taking a really honest assessment of what are our systems like? What are their capabilities? What's it cost for us to truly operate those systems? Because all too often we have hidden costs all over the place. And what's the talent of our people? So really getting a good lay of the land of the current state. And then envisioning that future state, really partnering with people to say, what would it be if we could do that? How could we get people to switch from using a Jostens yearbook software, which is our major competitor in the Herf Jones space, to using our yearbook software? How do we eliminate the friction? What's the key pain point for that volunteer teacher who's doing yearbook in her spare time? How do I make it easy to flip her to use our software? So understanding what those pain points are, understanding how we can delight our true customers, and envisioning that future state is the second step. And then it's pretty easy. If you're sitting here and you want to be there, how do you best do that over time at a cost and a timeline the business can afford? And what are those key priorities?
Yeah, we went through that. My organization went through that. We started off as a small little company with a data center in the middle of the country. And we've grown to one of the largest data center organizations. We went from bank funded to private equity to public, now possibly back to private again, as we've got a bunch of changes that have been announced. And it's been an interesting journey for all of us. I'm one of the original employees. As we, you have to, you always have to have these three things in mind: the employee, the customer, and the shareholder, whoever that is. And it does change. Or it does require the occasional, not constant, but the occasional reflection on what is our mission? What are we trying to get done? How do we take care of these three constituencies? How do we expand our mind? One of the things when you and I have spoken before, you talked about, we've talked about frictionless for the customer, but even internally, how do I make it easy for somebody to come alongside us to help us grow? So if I want to go public, or if I want to raise more equity and capital, organizations usually want to see that your infrastructure is mature, you know how to operate it, you're not in the middle of a bunch of change. Do you find that true in your world, or how are you helping your group to manage through that?
Absolutely, and really trying to understand what do employees want, especially now in the age of almost sort of post-COVID, is a really interesting question. We used to think about everybody's just coming into the office or they're fully remote, and there wasn't a whole lot of intermingling. And so now what do we want to offer our employee base, and how do we do that in a secure fashion? What makes them want to come into the office? Those are questions that we're all pondering right now as we're imagining bringing our employees back. But definitely the employee experience and how do we up the game there is also something that we're thinking about, because we as consumers now are bringing those expectations into the workplace. And you get really frustrated when you're trying to figure out, how do I submit an expense report? How do I enter in my banking information so my payroll check can go where it needs to go? How do I even find out where my payroll check information is stored? And right now that's fairly chaotic for our internal employees as we've grown from being three separate divisions to now becoming one company. So definitely thinking, as you said, around those key stakeholders of our employees, our customers, and our financial stakeholders are the three areas that we are re-examining as we take a look at how do we move this company forward and how do we prepare for an IPO? Because if there's three things that investors are scared to hear about when you're getting ready to go public, it's tell me, are you building a new headquarter building? Are you buying an airplane? And are you in the middle of an ERP deployment? And the third one lands square in my camp. So as we contemplate going IPO sometime in 2024, we are looking at how can we rapidly move our very old systems along and get them into a better state so that they are secure, so that they can delight those customers and our employees, but also make sure that our key fiduciary stakeholders are happy as well.
Yeah, that's a great, those are great three things. I don't know what would be more fun, a company plane or going through ERP. I never want to go through a major ERP program again. That's always seems to, no matter what they promise you, it always seems to be.
They're painful. Yeah. Because you're really re-examining your entire business. How do you pay your sales reps? What type of pricing structures do you want to offer your customers? How do you want to account for your revenue? What's your chart of accounts? So you're examining very fundamental elements of your business, and people don't have the time or the energy to do that very often. It is painful.
But necessary.
Absolutely. If we want to get to that future vision of a frictionless interface, I can't be building those frictionless interfaces with 14 or 16 different backend systems. The time and the complexity and cost would overwhelm us.
Yeah. Well, you look remarkably well composed for somebody who's working through that. Thank you very much for coming on the show today.
Thank you for having me.
I hope you have a great event. And I look forward to one of these days getting you on a larger longer conversation on the QTS experience.
Sounds like fun. I'd love to.
Good deal. Thank you, everybody, for joining us here at the ATP Cares event. If you've enjoyed this conversation, please like, subscribe, share, and comment. Take care. We'll see you next time on the QTS experience. And Weeden, thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Goodbye. We're out. Thank you.